do something that is different. And you look at all the heroes, and that's what they do.
The commitment to listen with the same passion with which we want to be heard.
In terms of who do you want to be, articulate that. Find the words behind that. Who do you want to be?
Welcome to the first episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast for 2024. A happy new year to everyone. I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas and wonderful holiday season. Now, as I mentioned on our last episode, we will be officially relaunching and resetting the vibe of the podcast as of the end of January. However, over the holiday season, I wanted to share with you all some of my favorite episodes. And today, I cannot think of a better way to kick off the new year than with insights, tools, and wisdom from somebody that I believe to be a true trailblazer in the global employee experience space. Her name is Catherine Lewis, and she is joining us all the way from the United Kingdom. Now, Kat, as she is affectionately known, is a multi-award-winning, globally recognized culture and transformation specialist. She is the founder of her own consultancy, also aptly called CAT, which stands for Culture and Transformation, where she spends her days empowering leaders to unleash the full potential of their people, acting as a catalyst for positive change in the workplace. To give you a little bit of background context, Kat is also the former head of global engagement and internal communications at Reward Gateway, who have helped more than 4,000 of the world's leading companies in 23 countries to make work better via an employee engagement platform. She is also an HR advisor for Tenzing, who are the go-to investor for ambitious entrepreneurs looking to scale tech-enabled businesses. And so, with all of that experience, you can see why Kat has won so many awards and why her work is recognized all over the world. And I was so honored to host her on the podcast. Now, as you can imagine, our conversation unveils so many valuable tools and insights. In a world where metrics often overshadow meaning, she advocates for a fundamental shift, urging business leaders to essentially see themselves as community leaders. And she also emphasizes that the true potential of any organization really does lie in the fulfillment and the happiness of its people, emphasizing the crucial role of course, purpose, belonging, and trust. And so, for the first time in 2024, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the DNA of Purpose podcast. Kat Lewis, I am so excited to have you beaming all the way in from London this evening, or this morning in your case.
Yes, it's nice early morning for me. Very, very happy to be here and joining you in Australia.
Oh, well, I'm very, very happy to have you. Having done my research, I can see that you are a woman of many talents. Your expertise in the area of employee engagement, employee experience, leadership, and organizational transformation is second to none. And I have so many burning questions to dive into with you today. So thank you so much for your time.
Exciting. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I'm gonna kick off with a question for which I know you are familiar with, because I ask all of my guests on the podcast this question. What I would like to know is, what question is currently guiding your work forward at this exact point in time?
Sure. It's been a good year for this, because I have asked myself a lot of questions about how I want to change my own future of work in a way that positively impacts everyone's future of work. So I actually, at the start of this year, left a company which I'd been with for over a decade, it's a long time for a big portion of my life, and a great company that I worked for and learned so much from. But observations there, and in that time when I was thinking about the change that I wanted to make, and they've continued through this year, I think the main questions for me have been, how can I help business leaders become better community leaders? I really think that the role of leadership has changed, and the way that we interact with leadership is just so different now. Mm-hmm. And their role and responsibility, I think there's some that have caught on to the different way that they are now seen within people's, their employees' world. And there's others which are just sort of starting to get used to that, and some completely oblivious to it as well. So I'm hoping to help them, as I say, become better leaders in that respect. I've been considering, as I said, over a decade working in the employee experience space, people experience space, or the different names that people give it. But seeing that impact there, I'm asking myself questions now about leadership experience, because so much of the people experience, I mean, you could put all hours of your week into trying to drive change there. But if the leadership experience isn't right, it's going to fall flat. So I wanted to shift my focus to that and really get to what I believe is the crux of the problem. I think from that, it led me onto the question of, how can I help them foster greater connection with people? How can I help them become more creative in their roles of engaging people with their own stories and narratives? That's what's inherent to human nature. Mm. And essentially, like, the end part of that would be helping the leader themselves and everybody within that community reaching their self-actualization, you know, like getting their self-esteem better and really hitting the top of Maslow hierarchy of needs, which is just so healthy for everyone.
Amazing. And I have to say, I absolutely love your reframe with regards to helping leaders to shift their mindset towards a community focus. It's an idea that I've been exploring of late in my work, and it's this idea that we really need to start to shift from these kind of hierarchical structures in leadership, or, you know, the egocentric top-down approach, to a more mm-hmm. circular ecosystem, which essentially mm-hmm. places the leader at the center of the community. And so I love that this is also something that you're starting to look at and starting to explore at a deeper level in your work, and also empowering leaders generally with the skills that they need to be able to embed these changes across organizations at large.
I sat a while ago, I went to a really great conference. It's down in Brighton. This was before 2020. It was one of the last conferences I went to before the pandemic hit. And it's a conference called Meaning. And you see all sorts of talks there, all sorts of leaders up on stage talking about their world and experience. And there was one that talked about how journalism has really had to shift in the last decade as to how they support their readers. And as a communicator, I'm always interested, because the media trains a lot of how we consume stories, social media the same. So I take a huge amount of inspiration from best practice there to influence my work and my world. And it said there around how media is no longer, with everybody with their iPhones and reporters all over the world, it's no longer about telling them what you think they need to know. It's about them giving you the information and you answering it. So it's much more circular in the content that's created. You can actually find out firsthand from somebody that's on the ground what's happening, what their story is, where they're seeing it, rather than just having this, as you say, top-down approach of, this is all the things I want you to know. Mm. Now it's, here's the things that you need to know that you don't have. And I've taken that approach. I just saw it and it just switched on for me. Like, this is what leadership should be. This is how the storytelling should be for everyone.
Totally. And I am going to bookmark you right there because I have a question that is specifically related to that with regards to strategic communication, which I know is also an area of mastery in your work, which is amazing. Before going into all of that, though, I kind of want to tap into your purpose and your personal journey of discovering, I guess, your Dharma. And so what I'm curious to understand is, you know, as you look back across your career trajectory, was there any particular moment in time or turning point where your purpose became really clear? Or do you feel that your purpose is something that's kind of gently unfolded over the course of your life?
Yeah, I think it has gently unfolded. It wasn't like I never thought I was going to end up doing the work that I'm doing now. Mm. Other people saw it in me. I had a fantastic manager who always said to me, "You're going to be a strategic leader." But I'm a very visual person and I didn't understand what that looked like. And there was a time when I met a guy called Ian Pettigrew. He does fantastic work with Clifton Strengths. And I met him through work that I do with a charity called Hope for Justice. Ian did coaching with me and helped me understand what my core strengths are. And it's through this psychometric testing piece that I always say that was a bit of a catalyst for me because it was something so different. I actually was able to visualize for myself. The results came out as top level strategy, communications, winning others over, futurist, activator, and the list goes on. But it just enabled me to get a qualifier, I suppose, of all the commentary that other people had said about my work. That was that was something that could sort of confirmed for me I'm on the right track. And there was also when I was 33, that was a bit of a change for me. I started to travel a lot more. I wrote my first book, which went down an absolute storm. I had never expected it to be so popular with everyone.
Tell me about the book. What was the book about?
The book was... it's called The Little Unicorn, An Adventure into the Disengagement Danger Zone. And I turned a business book, all the principles of everything we'd done within the company for the last 14 years. They had a very traditional business book version. And I created a storybook, which only takes like 15 minutes to read. And I knew then that I kind of nailed the storytelling technique and was able to, I don't know, just use writing to entertain, engage, educate, and unlock that creative mind in people to get them to see things in a different way, bringing fun back to work.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're all wired for storytelling at that evolutionary level. So what a beautiful way to be able to translate that wisdom for people.
Yeah, it was great. And to explain it a little bit, so the unicorn is somebody like me who does my role, going around trying to engage and change the workplace for the better. And then you have the disengagement danger zone, which I changed the archetypes that you'd meet in the workplace into like the cynical squirrel who lost their red color coat and turned gray, the fish in the pond that couldn't see anymore because the water had got so murky. All these little different characters. And I think one of my favorite moments was doing a global event. There were people from every different continent in the room and they all connected and laughed at the different characters and the jokes in the room. And I was like, we've kind of nailed this now. Get the storytelling. It's hit everyone's heart from like each end of the earth. So I was really pleased with that. That was definitely a moment where I... started to transform my career and sort of set it on a different trajectory. It was really wonderful. Yes. And then, I think lastly, this year when I said I was changing my career, the company that we built from startup, working with some fantastic people, it was about 40 people when I joined, left. It was 850 when I left at the end of this year, but it became the first UK HR tech unicorn. It sold for nearly 1.2 billion. And that's when I realized the people I'd been around, we'd done it. Like, we'd changed the pace of employee engagement in the UK. We'd become the first UK tech unicorn in HR tech to do that and get that valuation. It was just a very significant year, and it was kind of like our...
Totally. And just in terms of your personal experience to be a part of a scale up that has moved that quickly, and to really get inside that level of organizational change to be able to take something from A to B in that way must have been like a mind-blowing experience.
It was fantastic. And I had had the privilege of being the one to tell the story, to translate it between, like, be the connector between the leadership team and the employees, and the sort of role model for the clients as well. To have that privilege was, it was amazing. I was so proud of everybody that had been involved and all the friends I'd made along the way. They really have become lifelong friends to have achieved something like that together. It's really, really special.
So can you tell me a little bit more about Reward Gateway, I believe this company is called, if I'm correct? I know that... in that time, you guys specialized in employee engagement. So are you able to decode for our listeners exactly what employee engagement is all about, and why is it so important in the context of, you know, this age of relentless change and exponential progress and all of the things that are, you know, playing out within our workplaces every day at the moment?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Employee engagement, an easy way to decode it is to use the model that was created about 6 years ago. We made the engagement bridge model, which you'll be able to find online. I'm talking about a model that's the shape of a bridge. And at the bottom, there's three different sort of like core things that you'd have at work. You'd have the workplace, you'd have benefits and pay, and then you'd have well-being. These are the three things that every employer should have generally to run their business, whether that's working at home or in the office now or wherever you would be. And yeah, you need employees with good health, and then you're paying them. But with just those things, there's going to be a gap. If you are not connecting with your employees in any other way, then there's going to lack meaning and purpose at work, because they're just coming and getting those basic parts. But where's the connection there? And so the first part that layers it across and starts to build this bridge shape is open and honest communications. Obviously, I'm a big fan of that being the first thing that's there. And layered on top of that, again, you have recognition, you have job design, you have management and leadership, and the bridge is there with these 10 different elements that you'll be able to find. And so to make that easier to understand, I think many people are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is simply the hierarchy of needs that you'd have at work. So you can translate them across very, very simply, and it gives you that same pinnacle of self-esteem at work, self-actualization as to, like, what is my purpose and what is my career, and how can I play a really vital role in helping the strategy of the business succeed. Without these things, I think a lot of the time people will just focus on the spreadsheets of how the business works, what are the numbers, and not really understand the human side of, doesn't always correlate with how the numbers will change, because unlike a spreadsheet, people are unpredictable. So you do have to create the environment for them where they feel the most supported, the most able to speak up and feel cared for by you as a company. And yeah, that's probably the best way of explaining it. And it would be touching on, you know, thinking about how you engage them from attracting them as employees to your company, all the way through of being onboarded to their time with you and you're developing them. And then when they leave the company eventually, because no job's permanent, it's going to happen one day, how do you then turn them into advocates for your business that will go on and talk wonderful things about you for the rest of the time? Yeah.
Awesome. So, Kat, you just mentioned the subject for which I am so passionate about being obviously purpose. So I want to have a little bit of a chat and a deep dive into that subject. Through your experience, what is the role and significance of purpose in the workplace?
Yes, I think purpose is a big part of the wellbeing strategy at work. There is so much reward that comes from getting out of bed in the morning and feeling like you have purpose and meaning in your day. It's important for the mental health of people. It's important for the energy that people bring to work. There is so much money being spent on all sorts of wellbeing tech at the moment, which is wonderful. I do really like that. But I just find it quite ironic when actually the simplest thing to do would be to connect people and help them understand what purpose they play in your strategy at work and how meaningful their work is as well. So where I've just talked there about the engagement model, my brain this year is thinking about that purpose model and how you actually show people very simply, this is how everything that you're doing in your day-to-day role is connected right up to these top goals that we have set ourselves as a company. And this is how you're meaningful and how you're moving that forward.
Amazing. And just because I'm curious, do you have any methods in place to measure meaning, to kind of track whether that's actually successful in an organizational structure?
Sure. I think some of the work that communicators or like people in my role would do, it can be difficult to get that right, because yeah, sometimes you can't measure how people feel. You have to see it. You have to, I don't know, there's a sense for it. What obviously there is, and I've partnered with a really great company called the People Experience Hub, is you can track it on the analytical data in terms of measurement of surveys. Now, sometimes surveys have proved difficult because you can show the results of them to a leadership team and they'll always look at the date and there'll always be some reason that something's happened that, oh, I can pin the results of that particular survey on this event in time because that's when it was open. And what I really liked about the People Experience Hub is actually the surveys are no longer going to have an open and an end date. They're tracking it to meaningful moments at work, where the survey would be tailored exactly to the people experience and they would be asked questions specific to their user journey, I suppose, throughout work, not open just for this set window, but a permanent loop of feedback that comes through at the moments that matter most to people, whether that's a promotion, whether that's you've been on a long period of leave and you're coming back into the business. Perhaps it's that the whole company's had this change initiative happen and they all have to be asked the questions. But it's not just a set template of a once a year input, it goes throughout. And so
it's kind of playing the long game in terms of data. You're actually getting a lot more information over a period of time to understand those peak experiences.
Yeah, something that is much better for trend analysis, something that's more real and tangible rather than just a set week or 2 weeks of saying that was that then. So this is just coming out now. I'm really looking forward to working with it and seeing how it's going to change that shape. It's going to be great to be able to present information and not have that first thing of, oh, well, that was a difficult week because we were doing end of quarter work and the focus wasn't there or anything like that. It will sort of remove that and put the focus really on the people experience that's happening rather than being distracted by what was else could have been going on at that time. So I think that's going to change the way that we find the impact and value that this is having, as you were just saying.
Amazing. Amazing. And so I understand in doing my research that a significant part of your work has been on establishing effective channels for strategic communication within organizations. Now, at the beginning of the podcast, we spoke about the fact that in the past, communication may have been primarily top-down, with leaders delivering messages without much feedback. They're kind of coming in and saying, this is how it is, and you know, flick the marble and off it goes. And we don't really know how that message is received or whether it's actually being integrated or what people think about those messages. However, today there seems to be a greater emphasis on not only amplifying the voices of your people, but also really listening to what they have to say. And so I'm curious to know, in your experience of strategic communication, do you feel like it has evolved to a point where it's built to accommodate feedback loops with employees? And what does it look like when an organization achieves this and is able to successfully integrate these kind of communication loops between leaders and their people?
Sure. Establishing feedback loops, I think, is critical to the success of any strategy. You need to know how it's landing. You need your people to be your eyes. They say leaders really only know about 4% of the problems that are happening in their business. If you see the iceberg of ignorance model, which has been around, let's say, for years. And it just works because it's so true. So establishing feedback loops, whether that's having, I used to do like Slack roulette, where I would just pick out random people at the end of my week and send the message to just drop in and chat and how they're doing at the end of the week, what's been happening in their world. It wasn't just me doing this. We also had our CEO who would have donut time. So he had an app within Slack, which would then put him in conversations to have an hour catch up with somebody from anywhere in the business and get to understand their world. We encourage that across all the business. So people, you're building that social equity within the business, having those water cooler moments that can be difficult to have it in the day to day. I think the feedback loops there, it's around anecdotal feedback that you're getting at, that feeling that people have, understanding what's going on in people's worlds. There's a lot happening in the external at the moment, and you need to understand how they're coping with, you know, all of that stress that's happening externally. And I especially learned this through COVID. You need to look at what's happening externally to understand what's happening in your business as well, so you can adjust, create the benefits and support that are needed to alleviate those external stresses to then enable them to sort of continue and thrive at work. So yeah, feedback loops, how are you doing the anecdotal ones? And then how are you looking at it and qualifying it through the ongoing measurement, which would be more analytical, which I've said about there, the moments from a company like the People Experience Hub, or previous to that, I was using just a mixture of surveys, which would be measuring both belonging throughout the year of different groups. We could use different celebratory days to look at different demographics in the business and engage them with that. The overall engagement survey, which I created and I use in my own business, which sort of taps onto those 10 elements of the engagement bridge, makes it really easy to build a people strategy to underpin your company goals then. And yeah, checking and measuring on mental health, I think, is such an important factor of directing where you need to go next. So feedback at all those levels. There's another part which I think not many companies or people in my position get to do, and I just wish that more leaders saw the value in it. My CEO, Doug Butler, he spent every Friday afternoon with an hour with me every week. I realized we spent, like, this must have been 367 Friday afternoons talking about what was happening in the business. Now, I would love to know if anybody also has a CEO that spends that much time with HR and really understands what's going on in the people experience. It meant that I could be the ear for him on the ground, translating what he might not understand about an employee experience. It's their first job coming out of university. It's their first time moving to, I don't know, our office in Sydney, and they've never worked in a company there before. Or it's a mum that's returning to work after a long period of leave. You know, all these different things, which I can then translate into his world. So he's not just thinking through it through the lens of his experience at work. He's much later in his career. He hasn't perhaps got the same stresses that others in the workplace do. So we could have that one-on-one time and build empathy, understanding, and more connection when he's doing his weekly blog, which he would then send out every Monday. So yeah, there was that feedback loop there, which wasn't visible to everyone in the business, but it was extremely valuable.
Oh, so important. And empathy being the key part of that conversation, to really be able to put yourself in the shoes of the people who are working for you and driving your movement forward, whatever that is, and to see the world through their eyes. I think if more leaders actually spent the time doing that and sat down with their incredible HR teams to really understand, you know, what the challenges are, as well as the opportunities, that we would see organizations move with an entirely different level of agility, adaptability, innovation, all of the things, all of the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Exactly that. And sometimes, you know, sometimes our conversations would even be around just, he's based in California. There's a large portion of our team are in London. So sometimes I'm even just talking to him about things that are happening in London at that time. So he's got a better understanding of like the cultural differences that we have in. I spent a long time in our Bulgarian office. So getting him to understand the different nuances there. It's important just because you won't see, when you're a leader, people might put you on this pedestal and you won't get that same connection because they could think, oh, CEO's here. So then having a right-hand person that can be your connection and do that for you and happily know that it's a safe space to share anything and everything with you, it will only enrich the way that you experience your leadership.
Yeah. And if we can layer this up for a minute, earlier in the conversation, you know, I spoke about exponential progress, most notably artificial intelligence and automation in the context of future of work. And then you've also got hybrid working and remote working. I imagine that whilst the technology is amazing, in the context of AI, counterintuitively, it kind of places the focus on exactly what we're talking about, the human skills and what it means to be human in the workplace, particularly when, you know, an algorithm might come along and take up 30% of our role. Well, then how do we know what skills our human beings do have and where they can try new things if we don't spend the time connecting with them and really knowing who they are and what makes them tick, essentially?
Yeah, I think it's such a good point, giving people opportunity to show what they can do. Yeah. Do you know, you're taking me back to something earlier as well. The question that you asked about moments in your career which kind of changed things. Very early on in my career, I had Glenn, the founder of our company. He would really push you. And one of the company values was to push the boundaries. And he'd push you in such great ways and provide spaces for learning opportunities, which I'm so grateful for now. Mm. We set up a internal TV show. So it was called Global Briefing, perfect now for like hybrid world of sharing news with employees.
Awesome.
Had a little studio set up and I was a presenter on that. So I did 100 episodes of presenting the company news. The CEO would say it and then you'd have the employees repeating it. So they're advocates of your same messaging, but they're translating it into the employee voice and they're adding, I don't know, a little bit more entertainment and how do employees talk to each other about things, memes, jokes, like all of this different, like
all the human elements.
It was so fun. And I think that's another great way of then using, as you say, about the feedback loops, like having it so that you've got one voice saying it and then you've got the other saying it too. And that's like a massive skill builder for employees to create those spaces of public speaking where they can feel seen, heard, learn about themselves in like social spaces and remove so much fear. Now, when I talk to people about just going on stage and having their voice and things, it can, or even on camera, can be a lot harder to convince people to do that because they've got this inherent fear. But I am incredibly grateful for having that experience and a leader that pushed me and just made it a completely safe space to do that. I think those opportunities need to be created and cultivated.
Absolutely. Yeah. And clearly they could see your natural talent, which I am very blessed to witness today also. So Kat, let's dive back into the hybrid working. What do you think about remote working? Because I know there's a lot of research that has surfaced of late saying that there are a certain number of CEOs who are kind of like, I'm not into this remote working thing. I want people back in the office now. And then, you know, you've got employees who are like, actually, I quite like the flexible working thing. On one hand, you know, you can kind of go, well, yeah, you can kind of get it from the connectivity collaboration piece of having people in an office. But on the other side of that, you've got incredible reductions in terms of carbon impact in remote working. Plus, there are maybe other well-being benefits for employees. Over to you. I'm really curious to get inside this landscape with you.
You can see me getting like stressed.
I can see it. I'm loving it.
Because I have a lot of thoughts about this situation. And I think it's very short-sighted. I understand why it's happening, but in terms of leadership, it's very, I understand businesses are struggling right now. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult time. The economy is struggling after a pandemic. There is so many different factors affecting the world right now. Times are difficult. They're different. As you said, AI is coming and we're understanding how to blend that with our skill sets. There's wars happening, which brings so much uncertainty in terms of like investment world and all of this. It's time for businesses to really focus on strategy and adjusting to that future transition as to like, how are we going to navigate this? And are we agile and reactive and prepared enough to understand that our business can be resilient, strong, and adapt to this change? Because of the exponential curve that's happening in the earth, you need to get faster and faster at this. I don't think some leadership teams are ready for it. They feel like they've lost control. And the easiest thing to then do is think, well, everything was fine 5 years ago. So what did we do then?
Back to business as usual.
Yeah. And so the easiest thing to do to say, well, I've done something, is to tell everybody to come back into the office. That is not a strategic initiative for me. Like, that is actually taking yourself back 5 years. You are going to lose track. You are going to fall behind. You are going to have another like Kodak story. We've been there all before of when you had a hugely successful business and then it's just boom, gone, because it's not adapting to the modern world and the future of work that's coming. So I get it. I can completely empathize and understand. It feels like a very good way of asserting control over something. It feels like a tick list. I've done something, but it is like you're picking the low-hanging fruit there. You really need to focus on the bigger picture to what's happening in the world. So that's my opinion on this. I think it would be better for business leaders to think, okay, I can't just go into my office now and talk to people and say, this is what I want doing, because I hear that from a lot of leaders that I really like the days when I could just say, hey, everybody, get into this room. I'd like to chat about that. It's going to mean more work as a leader. It's why I see myself as dedicating myself to leadership experience and supporting
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, because it's really that leadership mindset shift that we spoke about earlier.
Yeah. Of focusing on the communication, of committing to a strategy on paper so that different learning styles can absorb, reflect, find it in a central place online, wherever they are, and understand where their roles are correlating to, so they know, here's my purpose for today, and this is the actual meaning it has at the company I work for. So many, many leaders will give themselves a pat on the back to say, well, I got up on stage at the quarterly or annual year and told them as what's happened in the future, my job is done. That just doesn't cut it with me at all. I don't think you should be giving yourself a pat on the back for that. I want to see CEOs that are able to create a narrative for employees to follow, that are able to understand how to empower people with information so that they are engaged and enabled at home or wherever they're working, and that they can really understand, as I say, how to lead the community through the changes that are happening in the world, in a way that accommodates and is inclusive of everyone's needs.
Totally. And leveraging the opportunity at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like one of the things I found really interesting is the research that I read was a KPMG CEO report. And I looked at the Australian version of this and the global version of this. And both of them cited a focus on two key areas. Firstly, hybrid working, we've just discussed it. But the second one was on ESGs. And mm-hmm. I found that really interesting because they were being addressed as two completely independent silos, yet one completely solved the problems on the other. Like I think in terms of carbon imprint, remote working, one of the stats in the UK was reduced by like 87%. It was something that big in terms of the scale of that opportunity. And yet you've got all of this resistance happening and like competing goals. And, you know, I found that really interesting, the inability to break down silos in looking at where to focus one's attention. And, you know, I know in looking at your work, a lot of what you do is bridge building, maybe not in that capacity, but there are so many ways that bridge building can happen, right?
That's 100% it. It would be taking every aspect of the company and what needs to be achieved. And once you map it out for people, they can then make the connections because people are thinking in their silos, as you say. There is so much regulation and measurement and pressure on businesses now with the ESG. And you're so right. A lot of it can be solved with just thinking around the people experience and how we work. The offices went paperless before, and I'm sure at the time people thought, what do we do if we can't print things? Well, we don't have hardly any printers anymore at all. So there are ways and means of getting around every problem. It just means adapting and changing your way, and it needs to happen. It needs to be that shift.
Yeah,
I'm excited for it. I'm somebody that likes to activate, and like my skill is to think in the future as to like what's to come, but there are a lot of people that need to be taken on that journey. So if you are in a business that's struggling with that change, you need to think who can tell this story to get the buy-in from people and have change management rolled in out in a way where it's not just throwing people at the destination already without explaining the why or the steps that you take them on to get there. It needs more thought than just, okay, that's it, shifted.
Yeah. So, Kat, you're the founder of Culture and Transformation, which is otherwise known as CATS, as you shared with me prior to the podcast, and I absolutely love that little personal touch. And you also do work with a company called Tenzing, who are a private equity firm, and apologies if I mispronounce the name of the company there, by the way. I know that you provide mentoring support and regular roundtable discussions to the HR teams are within the Tenzing portfolio. So with all of these experiences, the leaders that you are working with, I imagine, are working in very fast, agile, and high growth environments. So what I'm curious to know is, in light of that experience and also in reflecting on the conversation we have had, what attributes does a future-focused next paradigm leader have? If we're to really lean in here and go, well, if the world is shifting in all of these directions and the future of work looks a certain way, what qualities does that leader need?
I have been working with Tenzing now, I think it's coming up to 4 years, and I really, really love my work there. They have a wonderful portfolio of companies. Tenzing themselves are actually a B Corp, so they're in tune with the ESG side of things.
They had an amazing section on ESGs on their website, and it was one of the most beautifully articulated goal setting that's publicly available that I've seen in terms of looking at companies. So, yeah.
I'll be delighted to hear that. So the opportunity for me at Tenzing is working with companies who were the size of Reward Gateway when I started. So when working with businesses that are under 100 employees on their start of the growth trajectory, and helping them with all the hindsight that I now have, having been through startup all the way through to a £1 billion business, you know. So how would I have done things differently, and what did I learn from those leaders along the way? I have had a great set of values which kind of guided the journey throughout, but the leaders that I see there now, I think they're all fantastic at this creation, the entrepreneur, the focus and operational side of things. The switch and the purpose of culture and transformation is me helping to build on their soft skill side of communication, taking people on the journey, like honing in on what do you not know that I need to teach you as a leader, which goes back to that, what I was saying about the way journalism has changed, getting them to understand the way people engage with content now and how to best use, like actually make their jobs a lot easier. Because if you are a CEO, say, and you are a private equity company, there is going to be some big milestones in your business that are going to happen over quite a short space of time. And if you are connected and you're communicating on a frequent basis, and my goal is always to get the CEO being visible on a weekly basis, it sounds like a lot, but people are getting to understand your tone of voice, your behaviors, the type of person you are, you're building that trust. Then when you come to sell your business in the future and something that significant happens, your company, your employees aren't immediately fearful. They are excited to celebrate this with you. They are pleased with the success that has happened. They are not worried because they know what your voice is through all that time, and they know that you've got their best interests at heart. So it's makes it a lot easier then if you've got everybody on board when these really big change big projects come on.
Yeah,
you've invested that time beforehand. People know how to gauge you. They won't be hackles up. They'll be like, oh, great, this is exciting stuff. I think it's interesting with private equity because the general model, as I say, it's 5 to 7 years that they would have an investment cycle for. So how do we then correlate that and bring in, like, Tenzing have a fantastic growth team and an entrepreneur panel, tallying up the lifespan of private equity with a sustainable approach to business where you're actually long-term goals of the company in terms of short-term gains that they are interested in. I think having a leader that can balance both of those is
it's almost it's the ability to integrate circular thinking into your leadership strategy, right?
Being a diplomatic leader that can listen to every voice, but then understand how to take everybody on the chosen journey. Yeah, I think that's a critical part of what's needed.
Love that. And so another critical aspect of employee experience that I'd love to explore with you before we sort of move towards the end of our conversation is health and well-being in the workplace, because, you know, I think it's a really big one, and, you know, I think it's really important to sort of start to destigmatize conversations about mental health, depression and anxiety. But it's also an area that I imagine is difficult to define. Like, how do you actually go about getting clear on what well-being means in the workplace, how you measure it, what you need to integrate? Because it's such a personalized thing, isn't it? Like, what makes us well? So how does an organization do that? You know, is it a gym membership, or is it like something that runs deeper than that?
I remember when I started, it was all about gym discounts. This is where the industry was. And it's changed so much since then. We had physical well-being was so spoken about. And then we've had financial well-being and mental well-being added into the equation.
Yeah.
I think people starting to get their head around that. And then in the last year, I've started to see social well-being, career well-being, and family well-being added into that whole spectrum of the ways to be well at work. So I'm enjoying seeing this understanding grow. And I think there's multiple ways that businesses can enrich their culture to support these different aspects of well-being. I think it's important. I think so much of it had been before around, for me as a woman at work,
yeah,
always a focus on the mothers at work and how they're experiencing that, or what does that mean for people that perhaps haven't got a family, or what's there to benefit them. I've most enjoyed watching the change around mental health support at work. I have seen it go from, you know, EAP was the only thing that was there, a voice at the end of the telephone who you'd never meet, to now in London, we have actually got on the high street amongst like your high street stores and things, a company called The Self Space have built the first like walk-in center, which you can go. It's wonderfully warm and welcoming. It's got sofas, it's got warm lighting, and you can get matched with a therapist when you just walk in and have a mental check-in, the same as I would walk into
that
a gym.
That is awesome.
Yeah. They
I
are,
love that.
Really great things, and just putting it like right front and center on the high street there is a great way of then having a conversation tool to talk about, to even say, hey, have you seen it's there? Should we go in and explore it? I've just met some really wonderful people through that whole change of the mental health landscape. I think a really, really popular piece for our employees was introducing mental health coaching. So this is just focusing on forward goals and then recognizing your blocks around it. We had an external company called Sanctus come in to support this. And it's amazing because just bringing somebody external in creates immediately an objective view of just focusing on what's important to that employee at the time, with no judgment or bias or any other understanding of their world of work. They can just go in there, let it all out, and really understand themselves in a whole new way. I mean, one of my colleagues at the time, he talked to them about so much, like moving house, preparing for his proposal to his now wife, having two children, but also going in and then talking about these huge sales targets that he's got to cope with as well. So it was a big support for him that he was able to go in there and talk about all these different things on his mind whilst then also achieving his high targets at work.
Mm.
So I have really enjoyed seeing this journey and the transition of how well-being has become more encompassing of those different aspects, as I say, physical, mental, financial, social, family, career.
Mm.
Ultimately, I think people spend so much time at work. There's many, many, many hours that we spend in our week at work. And our responsibility as companies is to look out for our employees. I mean, they dedicate a lot of their lives to you, and you'll be the ones to see the flags of things when they are wrong. You could be the first person that somebody opens up to as a manager if they can't talk at home to say they're struggling, or you will see in their work that perhaps things aren't quite right. And I think you need to have those support functions in place to say they are giving so much to you. It's important that well-being is given back. It's the least that any decent employer can do. I think somebody said to me once before, you know, you always have your three plates spinning. You have your family, you have your love life that's happening there, your partner, and your work life. And if one of those comes out of balance, it can be significantly impacting on the other two, and just putting it all out of space. So helping people to keep that balance, it's really important. I think in the UK, you know, there's pressures on our National Health Service. And if the company's in a position to be able to fast track people to get support when they need it, it can only benefit our wider community. Going back, as you were saying, about that ESG and there's community work that we can do, how can you alleviate some of the pressures in that way? Ultimately, just creating a healthy space across all of those sections is only going to benefit you as a business. So it's the right thing to do. It's good for people, it's good for business, and it's good for community. I mean, what is there not to like about all of those things?
Absolutely.
Trying to remind like people when I say this, it doesn't always have to start with a really, really expensive well-being strategy that you're doing. It starts with inclusion, communication, and like engaging your people in you as a leader.
Yeah, beautiful. And if anyone wants to learn a little bit more about, you know, mental health and the monster in the office, I know that they can also check out your storytelling YouTube channel, which has some incredible, incredible videos that have been created in a beautifully entertaining style with cartoons and poetry. Can you tell me a little bit more about that creative work?
Sure. So yeah, that started with the little unicorn.
And yeah, I saw it there actually. Yeah.
So yeah, that started off as that book. And then again, understanding content and how people engage with that online, I wanted to create short stories that are easily shareable for people to really grasp what's so important at work, one of those being well-being with the monster in the office. And that one stuck in my mind. I like to run, something that I do in my spare time, and running can bring poetry to mind. So I have it in my head. There's a monster in the office and we call it mental health. It's been living up here.
You really are talented. Are you telling me you can run whilst writing poetry in your head? That is a skill. I love it.
Because... And it says, so we put it in a box and labeled it with fear, then weighed it down with misery and heavy, anxious tears. Mm. And it was my observation of where mental health conversation had been before I'd started a transformation project in my world of work and what I do, and creating a story which people can enjoy. It will stick. Like, rhyme is a really great way of getting lessons to stick in people's heads. But also doing it in a way that it's suitable for everyone to enjoy. Like, even kids could have that same story in school and, you know, open up the conversation. You're no longer talking about yourself. You're talking about a cute little monster that's there. Yeah. So I'd seen this before. Actually, when I talk around that Self Space company that put mental health on the high street, I was having a conversation with Chance Marshall, who's one of the founders there, and he said, this is really interesting what you're doing with these stories, Kat, as a form of therapy. It's called narrative therapy. And when you take the inner issues that somebody's struggling with, and then you can use a character so they can talk around that instead. Mm. And it enables them to then bring out that what they're struggling with inside, all those traumas. And I just found that fascinating. I hadn't realized that's what those stories were doing, but I'd seen it and heard it. I just didn't know there was a name for it. So I released the little monster on World Mental Health Day. The little unicorn still trots around enjoying sharing that story in different spaces. And then there's the culture vulture as well, which talks around toxic places. The nicest thing with this is doing workshops. So when you go in and perhaps their conferences, and it can get quite keynotey, would be able to, or I love getting on stage, sharing the story, and then running a workshop afterwards. And that's when I see that narrative therapy come into play. People are like, oh yeah, I know that's I know that little monster, or I know that cynical squirrel, or oh yeah, I've experienced a culture vulture in my time at work. So they don't have to say names. There's no finger pointing. There's no blame. You can use the story to bring something to life that perhaps has been troubling you inside, and then explore all the different ways. Like, the unicorn workshop is all around, what would you put in your kingdom of culture, and what causes your disengagement danger zone spaces? And by the end of it, you've got a really good grounding for your people strategy, in a way that it's not a survey or something like this. It's a creative play, and it's bringing people's imagination out and using characterization to do that. It's very fun.
Creating the safety and the safe language to talk about how you can process through, you know, challenging situations or environments. Amazing work. I will definitely include the link to your YouTube channel, as well as a few other links where people can learn more about your world, in the show notes. However, what I'd like to know, just before we close, is there anything that you feel that you haven't already shared in today's conversation that would be important for our listeners to hear at this point in time?
I do have something that I'd like people that are listening to this podcast to hear. And it's something that comes up quite a lot when I start working with business leaders is they don't want to start speaking, perhaps because they are worried about what others think. There's fear there, or perhaps they think they're not interesting, or perhaps they think that no one's going to engage with them, or any of this stuff. And I think it's, hang on, I'm not wording this right. Let me start again.
Got it. I can edit it. You're good.
Yeah. I think, how would I say this? There was a really good piece of advice that I was given, which sticks with me every time that I'm creating content, or every time that I'm working with a leader and they might be getting worried about how people perceive them. Perhaps they're worried they're not that interesting, or that nothing's going on in their world that people are going to want to engage with. And it always comes back to this quote that I have in my mind. It's a Maya Angelou one. People will not remember what you said. They remember how you made them feel. And if you can make people feel safe and respected and valued and purposeful in their work, that's what they're going to remember you for. Don't worry about slipping up on words or saying something silly. That's not going to be what people remember. They're going to be remembering that you cared and you tried to make an impact on making their life better. That's the most important thing to think about when you open up communications and start to drive a transformation in the workplace.
Beautiful. And my final question today for you is, if you had access to the biggest billboard in the world where you could write a single word or phrase that encapsulates your most profound realization or contribution to the world, what would it be? What would you say and why?
That's such a good question. Biggest billboard in the world. You've got to make it short. You've got to make it snappy. People are going to be walking past. I'm going to go with open up communications. I would say this because it touches on so many different aspects of how to open up communications. You could go with whether it's the tech you're using and using open platforms where everybody can feedback and engage with it. It could be just opening up your own voice to get started on this. But most of all, as I say, it's the biggest way of starting to become a community leader and driving change, which is going to be truly impactful in your company and building momentum and helping all of that growth. I think those are the three most valuable words that I can add to my billboard.
Love it. Kat, it has been such a joy having you on the DNA of Purpose podcast. I mentioned I will pop your links in the show notes, but where is the best place for people to follow your work and to learn more about your world?
Sure. The best place to find me is on LinkedIn. So Catherine Lewis is my name on there. And I love LinkedIn because you can openly share and my entire work history and everything that I've ever been proud of is on there. I'm in the process of building my website at the moment. You can find it on there, and I'm getting myself a blog and things on there, but I just love LinkedIn because it's conversational. I can see your work, you can see my work. So let's connect on there and come and tell me more about you.
Fantastic. And I can attest to the fact that there is so much value on that LinkedIn page, whether it be, you know, content pieces, posts. I've had a really good look through today, Kat, and you are certainly somebody who has stepped fully into contribution and into your purpose in the world. And I know there are so many people who deeply appreciate what you do and how you roll and show up in the world, including showing up for me today and our listeners. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, Kat Lewis.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, as always, for dedicating your time to the DNA of Purpose podcast. As we conclude today's episode, I invite you to extend the conversation online. Feel free to reach out via LinkedIn or follow along at Rebecca Maklad, that is M-A-K-L-A-D, on Instagram, where we're crafting a tapestry of stories, reflections, tools, and insights to empower your purpose-driven leadership strategy. I love feedback, and we always welcome guest suggestions. Should today's episode ignite a spark within you, reviews really do help us to continue to attract the world's most prominent purpose-driven leaders as our guests. And if you know somebody who would benefit from one of our episodes, then share that story with abundance. A big thanks to Supernova Tribe, who produce this podcast with style, and Guide Your Light, a network for podcasts with purpose.